ferry arrived at the salt bath's port, a jetty of mud and stone construction sticking out from the rock face. A tasteful sign hung above the entrance into the basalt cavern, claiming peace and relaxation for all who entered. From the outside, it looked like the type of crummy dive bar people like Deaton were likely to turn up in.
Thought this place was more cream than water.
A gentleman in a coat just wide enough to encircle his impressive orbit looked down a long nose at him.
Well, it certainly shouldn't look it from the outside, young man. This is the Scorched, after all. Ruffians abound in these troubled skies. Wouldn't want to advertise the place. Could you imagine thieves in the baths? What a terror!
The girthy man clasped his waif of a woman closer. Arm in arm, they disembarked.
Thieves? In the baths?
A terror indeed.
Grinning, Deaton sauntered under the basalt arch with its plain sign. The baths were set aside from the salt brick cavern, and the bemused steward had explained that it was to keep the steam from melting the walls, which made sense now that it was brought to his attention. Salt and water got on a little too well to be expected to keep themselves presentable in close company. Deaton and Tibbs found themselves alone in the western wing of the bath halls, a coincidence no doubt engineered by the sharp-eyed steward.
Can I get you anything, sirs?
Tibbs poked at the slab of pink-veined salt floating on the surface of their tub.
What's this for?
That's the salt part of the bath, sir. It is good for softening the skin and detoxifying the humours.
If you detox old Tibbs, he might come apart at the seams.
I assure you, it's perfectly safe, sirs.
Well, tally-ho then.
Deaton dropped his towel and eased down the slick steps into the warm water. He'd experienced a lot of nice things in his days, mostly having to do with whiskey and women and the occasional warm rainfall, but this was pure bliss.
I'll return to check on you in a month, sirs. Please do ring the bell if you require anything.
Will do, new chum.
Deaton watched him go.
Poor fellow. I don't think he has a chum in the world.
Sorry, look, he's found one on us, sir.
Methinks our stalwart steward is hiding a less than reputable past.
Leave the lad be. Not everyone's neck deep in conspiracies just because you are.
As you like. Are we really going to sit around in this stew all day?
Long as they let me.
You've no imagination. Did you see the cubbies where we put our things?
No locks.
This is a respectable place. They don't go missing.
Then Deaton snagged up Tibbs's glass.
Ah.
The old fool was likely to get drunk and careless if Deaton didn't get the good stuff out of the way for him.
You heard the man. He's giving us a mark to have a look-see.
He's giving us a mark for the soak.
Nonsense. Let's go.
Deaton pulled himself out of the tub. He wrapped his towel around his hips and waited for Tibbs to do likewise. He did not.
What's the problem now, Tibbs?
I'm going to soak.
Huh. Well, I suppose it will improve your aroma. Carry on, good man, and look for me to return before the muck burns down.
Yeah, well, try not to get killed, eh?
The amenable steward had done Deaton the favor of showing him the most direct route between the lush baths and the men's cubby room, where the gentle guests left their outer shells for the duration of their luxury. Trusting lot, these bathgoers. Deaton tiptoed down the row, peeking into the stuffed cubbies until he came across one that appeared more stuffed than most. Marking the spot, he doubled back to his own accoutrements and slipped his leather money pouch from the folds. He tucked the goatskin in amongst the robust man's vestments. Then he shoved Tibbs's into the cubby of the big man's friend for good measure. Doubling back to his cubby, he scooped up both his and Tibbs's clothes, then fled the scene. Just as Brandon and his group arrived and began to attire themselves, Deaton and his entourage of two burst in upon them.
You bulbous, petty thief!
Are you accusing me of something, little man?
You and your foul aficionados stole my clothing and my man's and tossed them into the vents.
If your clothes were burned, it was probably because the cleaning staff thought they were rags. You have no proof.
Proof?
Do you have any idea who I am?
I reckon you're Reynold Grandin, as the steward's paper says.
You're blasted right I am. got a 10% ownership in a Rancor's cellium mine, and I will not be treated like this by some withered example of wormwood.
And do you have any idea who I am, Grandin?
Oh, Sarah, I don't think that's really necessary now.
Yes, I do. Oh, yes, I know you're tight, boy. You spend your time slithering about the down crust, scraping together coin from sap to sap until you've got enough in your filthy fist to think you can make it up here with the right sort. Well, you've pushed the buttons on the wrong man, you swine. You understand? I will see you burn for wasting my time.
So, you don't know who I am. My name is Deaton Handing.
You're not a Handing.
Deaton turned around. He reached back and lifted the hair that hung above the nape of his neck. There, burned in white scar flesh with puckered pink edges, was his family crest. A pickaxe and sword crossed over the full sail of an old sea ship with the three stars of the landed below. The Handing family had been the first of them all to claim land rights on the Scorched.
Oh, but Dame Handing had died off. Thought her nephew died in a mining accident.
Then I'm sorry to disappoint you, Grandin, but here I am.
Pardon me.
Now, the steward here is going to have a look around your cubbies. If you're clean, then we'll forget about all this. If not, well, we'll work that out when we come to it.